Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ sanghaṃ namassāmi. So it's been in my cave for 2 weeks, having a wonderful time. And it just reminds you of the purpose of this monastic life, of learning how to be peaceful and still, and not just for its own sake, because that understands the reason why that we move so much to create rebirth. Remember, all movement of the mind is actually creating the suffering of the future. And if one can't keep still now, when one dies, one will be moving, and that movement will create another life, and here we go again. But the most amazing thing of one's meditation is just the number of understandings it gives you about the nature of this whole process of body and mind, and just how it sort of creates our world. And it's actually that understanding, those insights, you just cannot gain them just from reading the books. You can't gain them from listening to talks, no matter sort of who they're from. You do really need to have that experience to really understand the nature of this thing which we call the body and the mind. So the wonderful thing about meditation, yeah, you use it to be able to get still and peaceful and blissed out and happy, but then afterwards, I don't know, I think it's the nature of all beings, it's certainly my nature, always to inquire why. Where did that happiness come from? Why was that blissful? Why were you just having a wonderful time? And this is actually where we do gain those great insights. And already, just so far during this retreat, these simple teachings should not be thought of as being just basic Buddhism. Sometimes the most simple teachings are the deepest ones. And that simple teaching which I've given during interviews and also in a couple of these talks are the two types of meditation, Second Noble Truth and Third Noble Truth meditation. And that's what that does. Not only does that create the peaceful mind, because you know that I was wanting something, I was desiring, I was pushing the mind along. That's why it would never stop and become still. I was pushing it, I was driving it. And then when actually you understand that, when you understand suffering and its cause, that degree of little bit of insight means you can stop the suffering, you can stop the wanting. You can stop the interfering. You can stop this mind which has been conditioned for lifetimes always to get involved. And when it gets involved, it messes things up time and time and time again. Life and life and life again, always messing things up. And just to be able just to stop, get out of the way, disappear, none of my business, just happy to be here. This is good enough for me. It's not mine, nothing to do with me. All those beautiful words stops, and you're doing the third Noble Truth meditation. This is where you find the bliss and the happiness. Now the thing is, with the bliss and the happiness, one of the reasons why I emphasize that and emphasize, you know, the path of calm and peace and bliss and stillness, is simply because, you know, if you ask a person to be wise or if you ask a person to bliss out, which one would you want? You know, if you had a choice between wisdom and pleasure, most people would take the pleasure. Be honest with yourself. You know, would you rather have a cup of coffee? Or would you rather just resist and say, no, it's just going to be good for me, I'm going to be wise. The point is, it's that pleasure principle is something which I've seen drives my mind. Okay, you can try and resist it. You can try and say no and be a good monk. You can actually say no to these things and do restraint. But then you find in the corner of your eye you're looking at that beautiful girl who comes into the monastery. It's hard, isn't it? And the reason is because the mind does that. There's a great saying of the Buddha somewhere in the suttas, and of course Ajahn probably knows where it says, you know, that if you can't sort of enjoy the blisses of those deep meditations, that you'll never be able to resist the sensuality of the world. And the reason is because you've got nothing else. One of the things which I found in my meditation, if you don't get the happiness in meditation, you just go for the happiness in the world. the mind will just do that. You can't stop it. It's out of control. It will just incline towards those happy states, wherever it finds any pleasure. If it can't get the refined pleasure, it will get any pleasure. Now, just this morning, just finishing the retreat and going off to Jhana Grove to check the email. Oh, this is really heavy. Just all happiness ends in suffering. All suffering generates more happiness. All the beautiful happiness of just being in your cave, doing very little, and you go in there and just 64 emails. And really important ones. There's one very nice one there by the nice old friend. What's his name? Wimolo. It's this nice old English monk, Wimolo. And I remember when he stayed here for a while, he did a classic statement, which, you know, was down to earth, incredibly wise, where, you know, he said he was a young monk, he's getting old, but, you know, nevertheless, you know, the sort of, he saw a girl come in the monastery. Oh, she was just really old and ugly, just, you know, nothing very nice, but she'll do. That's insight, that's wisdom, because this is the thing, isn't it? Just, we'll just take whatever we can get. When it comes to food, to coffee, to sort of whatever else is going in the monastery. So that, it will do, she'll do, it will do. That's the thing, if you've got nothing else, you go to the lower stuff. And that's our problem, isn't it? Because we always settle for the lower stuff. You know, for the sort of the cup of coffee, for the sort of the conversation, for the messing around. And that's why that sometimes it's my job as a teacher, it's the sutta's job, it's someone's job, it's just to somehow to inspire you somewhere, just to get that crack, that little sort of chink in the wall, so you can actually see just what real pleasure, what real bliss is, that freedom. And everyone here has got enough faith. Either you've had some experience in the past, maybe only once when you were very young, or maybe just some little glimpse that you know that, you know, that's the happiness of the world, yeah, and it's nice, but it's not really the real thing. It's not good enough. There must be something more, and you've tasted or smelt, or you've got some idea, some distant twinkle in the end of the tunnel. There's something there. And when you start to taste these meditations, it's a great insight. It's not an insight of working things out rationally. You don't have to be a great intellect. You don't need to be trained in universities. You just know that is peace, that is happiness, that is the way, that is the path, that is the way out of samsara, that is the real truth. That's the meaning of my life, the beautiful peace and happiness, the joy of that. And certainly that's been the nature of my life, all the other things which I've done in my life, all the things which you've experienced. And there's always that meditation experiences, the purest, the deepest, even just more than anything else. Even more than reading the suttas, even more than understanding the Dhamma, it's the experience of the Dhamma. The experience of, you know, taste of freedom, as the Buddha said, vimutti rasa. It's a beautiful word, you know, the taste of freedom. You haven't eaten the meal, you haven't digested yet, but you've tasted it. And that taste is something which you can never forget. And that's when you've done the Third Noble Truth meditation, you've let go, and it's peaceful, it's happy, it's joyful. What you're understanding here is the insight into the nature of real happiness, the peace, contentment, freedom, the lack of wanting. And it's that idea that in those states, you experience those states, you don't just experience their causes, but you experience their whole nature. You know, the cause of an event is enveloped into the feeling of that event. And because you've come into those peaceful states of mind through not wanting, the states of not wanting, they celebrate the sort of the lack of craving. You know, the essence of those states, you know, what's embedded in them, what's sort of enveloped in them is no wanting, contentment, peace, and freedom from, you know, wanting to go anywhere, needing to go anywhere. And those beautiful states of mind, because they're based on the freedom from wanting and from craving, that gives them the stability. The trouble with the sensory world, whenever you want something, you get it and you want something more. There's never any peace in that world. There's pleasure, but no peace. But in the world of the meditation with the freedoms, there is not only pleasure, but there's the peace as well. And it's that combination of the peace and the pleasure which is the sign of samadhi. The five sense world, pleasure but no peace. In meditation, pleasure and peace as well. The great stillness and satisfaction. So you can rest there for a long time without wanting the next thing. It's a case of you can really have a holiday from wanting. And when you understand that, you just get these little insights. At last, this is it. You know, you've got that sort of that contentment, that sense of freedom. And, you know, you all have those in different moments of your life, especially in a retreat time. Okay, maybe having a hard time. It may be being frustrated. But look, if you're frustrated, it's because you've been wanting something. Because you've been striving and struggling. Okay, you know, if you haven't got anything, at least you've realized that much. You know, you've got some idea. And so after a while, just the penny drops. After a while, just those experiences, they teach you to go against that old habit of, you know, if you want something, try and get it, work hard, and then you'll get something. Instead, you just give up, abandon, renounce, let go. Just give up all this struggling and striving for things. Leave it alone. As you do that, and you get the peace, you get the happiness. It's teaching you the insight into the nature of craving. And craving is not just for the gross things. Craving is especially the underlying craving. Yeah, okay, the craving for sex, for food, for the next cup of coffee, for delightful. No, it's what's underneath all of that. What drives all of that. And that's the, you know, essential craving. And that essential craving is the force which moves you. It's like what turns the wheel of samsara. And that's actually what you really see in the deeper stages of meditation. Yeah, so, you know, you're watching the breath or you're falling asleep. What's the problem? Leave it alone. Stop. What do you really want? That again needs to be one of my ways of both practicing insight and practicing, you know, this stillness of the mind. Yeah, you know, you'd be meditating there and you'd be restless or you just couldn't sit still and you'd ask yourself, Ram, what do I want? What do I really want? And then you really understood after a lot of investigation using your brain, what I really want is this beautiful sense of freedom where I don't want anything. What I want is the end of wanting. Sometimes you think, oh, okay, you get the sort of the beautiful partner in life, the wonderful family, the nice home, the nice car, you know, the fame, the fortune, whatever it is people sort of go for in the world. When you want that, then I'll be happy. I remember used to reading in the newspapers about the people who, oh, they're in great strife. All I want is just my child to get better again. All I want, the only thing I want in the world is, you know, to get my visa and then I'll be happy. All I want is just, and of course, that's just total delusion. They think that once they get that, they'll be happy. And just once one want is half satisfied, it gives rise to two or three more wants. And that's also meditation as well. For some people, once they get sort of, you know, one stage of meditation. And how many stages of meditation have you achieved during this retreat? You know, sometimes in that first book I wrote, remember I started writing about stage 1, 2, 3, 4. I never talk like that anymore, do I? Because I've seen the problem in it. It's helpful, but it's a problem. Because then people start saying, I'm on stage 3. I've got another stage to go, stage 4, and then stage 5, and then stage 6, and then stage 6A, and 6B, and 6C. And there's no end of stages, is there? And that's why, you know, that in Theravada you get enlightened. But, oh no, can we keep going to become Bodhisattva? Look, it's all wanting, all more stages. And that's not what the path of Buddhism is all about. So there are times in your life when you stop wanting to get things. When for one reason or another, and a lot of times it's just desperation. You just give up, you've had it, had enough, I'm not going to try anymore. Now if you really can get to that desperate stage, you're not trying anymore, and being desperate enough to not have any hope for any sort of pleasure or fulfillment in the five sense world, just give up. Gee, you know, is how many years have I been meditating? Just the rains retreat is almost finished now. Gee, there's no hope for me. Brilliant. You're close. Those people are getting, they got a first jhana, just go a bit further and I get second jhana. And I'm screaming, I'll just get to be an anagami in another couple of weeks. Look, you've lost it. It's not about that. It's about just totally letting go of all these things and learning how to be content. And the great thing with the Dhamma, and you can learn this, you can be content with little. There used to be one of Ajahn Chah's famous sayings, which always asked us to be content with little. And many monks thought that was just, you know, just having few requisites. Yeah, it meant that, but it meant much more than just being having a few things. It meant having content with little wants, little desires, little things in your head. Because a lot of times, as I mentioned before, yeah, we have very few personal possessions, but our emotional possessions are huge. Our desires, our wants, our cravings, the stuff we carry on in our head, which other people can't see. It's just like a junkyard in most of your heads, isn't it? I remember these junkyards. There used to be a TV program when I was a kid called Steptoe and Son, about this dirty old man and his son. Unless you remember that, you dirty old man, Steptoe used to say to his father. Actually, Steptoe was a dad. But anyway, these two old guys had so much junk, you know, in their yard, which they would collect and they try and sell to someone sooner or later. I remember just, you know, one of the things, he had this whole bucket of false teeth. And when he didn't like one, he'd just try another one, you know, which he just collected from the tip or somewhere. It's very funny, but this is, people's heads are like that. They're like the junkyard of Steptoe and Son. They keep all this mess, this stuff, and a lot of stuff from the past, especially the lay community. Just he said this to me, he did that, she did this, and all that sort of stuff, you know, which is a junkyard in the head. So we may have few possessions in the world, but we have so much possessions inside, and they're the main problem. So we try and sort of be content with little in our heads. Content with little means that we don't really want very much. We just, you know, our stupid old mind, the mind which gets sleepy, which gets frustrated, which gets restless. And if you be content with that, you find the problem disappears. And it happens again and again. Look, I'm getting smart when I do my retreats. I make no goals. I have no aspirations. I'm not trying to achieve anything or go anywhere, because I've been there, done that too many times. I sit there and say, right, this is my holiday. I work so hard the rest of the year. I'm going to have fun. And for me, fun, just I used to, you know, have these dreams of going down the beach, sitting on a deck chair, just and having a cup of tea, just there, just absolutely nothing to do in the whole world. That was my dream of just, you know, a holiday. So, of course, you can't have a deck chair. There's no sun in my cave. But I've got the same attitude. I just sit there cross-legged and I'm just going to just relax and just enjoy. Now, with that type of attitude, because you're not asking for anything, you're not wanting anything, I'm very much attacking this wanting. I'm stopping it. It's a subtle thing, because sometimes you can want not to want, which is another type of wanting, and you know what your mind is does, it gets really convoluted sometimes. Should I, you know, let go and try and let go? No, you let go of trying. You let go of trying to let go. You let go of letting go. And you know, you're laughing there because you understand what I mean. It gets very tricky, but after a while you get very skilled because you just relax. You leave things alone. And of course the amazing thing is that it works. And you know, after many, many years, this is why I teach, because I wasted too much time in my life trying. And yeah, sometimes you get you know, reasonably nice states of mind, but you always want something more. There's no rest there at all. You're always on the go, always moving in your mind. And then you learn just how to sit there and just totally relax, totally throw away the steering wheel and just unscrew all those pedals. So you can't push anything at all. You just sit there. And of course, at first, you know, many people, and sometimes I used to think that, I think, gee, if I don't do something, I'll just fall asleep, I'll waste time, I'll get lost in fantasies, I'll just waste my time. Don't waste time. You know where that came from? I remember my Christian upbringing, they had this phrase, the devil makes work for idle hands. Now that's totally wrong. If you have idle hands, the devil can't find you. And if you really do, so stop and let go, you blindfolded Mara. Where the hell has this guy gone? I can't mess him around anymore. So this is actually where you learn. When you just sit there, it actually does work. So you have this bit of faith and trust. You are literally going against the stream. And I give those hints, encouragements again and again and again. Ajahn Chah gave it to me. I didn't believe a word he said. It made total nonsense. You know, I was just going my way, but it worked in the sense that he kept on pushing and conditioning me until, I don't know, just automatically the mind just decided to try that way. Decided just to sort of let go and just sit there. What the hell? I'm going to just sit and be peaceful. Whether I get jhana, whether I fall asleep, all the same to me. And it literally was all the same. And if you do things like that, the mind gets so peaceful and so still. Maybe not into jhana yet, but what it does, it teaches you the path. You get the insight into the path. Not through theories, not through the suttas. Because, you know, Ajahn Bhamani knows, as I've known, that two people can read the same sutta and some of them say, look, it's obvious, this is what the Buddha is saying. And the other person reads it and say, no, it's something different. And so, you know, you've got this sort of the words there. And to me, they're like neon signs. But to others, you know, the mind can't see it. It spins it around the opposite direction. That's the nature of delusion. So you just do need more than just the words. Even the words of the greatest teacher. And after a while, you have experience. The experience of peace. The experience of letting go. The experience of seeing wanting and seeing wanting stop. Seeing what let go really means. You taste it. It's there. You're not doing anything. This is, you know, what I keep saying, there's something in your mind which is missing. Which was never missing before. Something strange. It's the wanting. You feel just so peaceful. So free. And it's such a beautiful pleasure. It's not the same as sexual pleasure or having fish and chips or listening to music or, you know, laughing at a good joke. It's a different type of pleasure. It's the pleasure of the Dhamma. You're just sitting there and just totally happy, content. You're just free. You don't want anything. There's moments where you don't need to move at all. There's no doubt. There's no wanting to understand things. You're not trying to use this for insight. It is insight. It's direct stillness of the mind where it's not looking anywhere else. It's not trying to go anywhere else. It's not trying to plan the next journey to the next stage of meditation. It's not trying to sort of take any notes. I don't know why people try and take notes, trying to remember things. You just leave all of that alone. And so you stop. The mind is still. And of course, eventually, everybody does that. Everyone here has done that from time to time again, sometimes in the weirdest situations, maybe not on the meditation cushion, maybe just sitting in your heart just one evening and just having a cup of tea relaxed. And you just realize, I'm just really happy to be here. Even that sometimes when you're sick, and I've done that when I'm sick, and just, oh, this is okay. I'm just happy to be sick. It's good enough. And those moments are moments of freedom. And this is, you see the cause and the effect. This is the freedom. Now why? And after a while, you know, sooner rather than later, I hope, just, you know, the light bulb goes on in your mind. That this is the freedom because I've let go of craving. I don't want anything. I'm just content. I'm at peace. And you feel that. And you delight in that naturally, not because you force yourself to do it, not because you tell yourself what to do. I don't know how many times people say, well, I get to this stage, what should I do next? Oh, come on. How many times do you have to say, you don't do anything next? Well, what am I supposed to do? Oh, come on. You just disappear. Get out of the way. Stop thinking like that. Get a different paradigm. Just stop all of this controlling business. Okay, you know, you've got a peaceful state of mind. Enjoy it. That's why I say enjoy is another way of saying let go. Try to do something different. Enjoy. Just hang out. Chill out. In peace. And if you do things like that, you find another strange thing happens. The peace, the bliss deepens. It gets more profound. Stillness moves. It develops. Weird, counterintuitive. But when you really are still, that's when the real movement happens. When you're moving, you're going nowhere. So when you're really still, the mind moves, but it goes in the direction inwards. That's the meaning of that simile which I've given many years ago and I've repeated several times. It's like the path of Buddhism is like trying to find a way across the stream. You know, the very old simile in Buddhism. You know, go against the stream. How do I go against the stream? And you go, you know, up and down the bank of the river. Because, you know, you think that the stream is so wide, how can someone like me cross it? It's a mile, 2 miles, 10 miles wide. You need a ferry or a bridge or something to take you across. It's just too wide for me. But that's because you're going in the wrong direction. Up and down the banks. And just one day, you just go in a different direction. Instead of going on, you're going in. Instead of moving along, you still, and then you move in another direction. You move across, perpendicular to the back. And that's the amazing thing is that stream is just so, so narrow. What separates you from enlightenment is just so tiny. It's just you've got to turn around and find this new direction. Not go up, not go down, not craving, not ill will. That new direction, you turn perpendicular to the normal way you've been moving all your existences. You stop. Stop the craving, stop the walking up, stop the sort of negativity, the walking the opposite direction. Stop all of that. It's like you turn around, you're not still anymore. In the sense that you move deeper. You're not going up, you're not going down. You're still in that direction, in that dimension. But then you start moving inwards. You're walking across the stream. You're going deep. And this is what it feels like. It feels like you're falling deeply into something. It's powerful, it's pleasurable, but as you all know, it's scary. Which is why it's such a shame that sometimes just the fear, the excitement just stops people just making that last step across. And the reason is, again, ego, sense of self. Sometimes it's this lack of courage. The lack of the ability to take a risk. And that's why I've mentioned before, just sometimes that, again, this is most people here. They're dedicated to the truth so much. They really want to find out something. You know, if you wanted to, you could just go out there in the world and leave and just get a job and get. Australia's doing well. You can get a job up in the mines and make some money, do all this social work and just, you know, be a good person. But there's something which tells you, yeah, well, that might be useful, but its meaning is hollow. It's something which is not real enough for me. Which is why that you want to find out the truth. And again, the truth not in books, not in sermons. That truth which, you know, you can taste, you can smell, is this intuitive sense that in this direction you'll find something. It's that commitment to that at all costs, willing to sacrifice everything for the Dhamma. And that's why I call it the virya, the heroic effort. The willingness to sacrifice your whole existence. Not just your body, it's easy to sacrifice your body, you've done that many times. It's not just sacrificing the body not sacrificing your life for the Dharma, but sacrificing your will, your mind and your consciousness, the whole lot for the truth. Because that's what happens when you get into these really profound meditation states. You realize you're just letting go is much more than you expected. Now everything has to go. Not just the stuff you're willing to sacrifice, but much more than that. It's just like, you know, when you come into this monastery, yeah, you're willing to sort of give a few donations into the box. But you always keep plenty for yourself afterwards. Yeah, you can give some effort for the monastery and, you know, do the chores and maybe do extra work. But, you know, you're keeping a lot back for yourself. You know, what you want. So you give the monastery a share, but you keep a huge amount for yourself. In meditation, you give everything. The whole lot. Fully renounce, sacrifice, give up. And if you can't do that, you'll find this fear comes up. No, I can't give anymore. I can't let go. And that is just a tragedy. The commitment to truth, the inspiration, or after a while, just plain old frustration, after many lifetimes, sooner enough, the mind is going to say, I've had enough, I'm going for it. And you just get in there. You allow yourself to just move through that barrier of fear. And just give and give and give. And just let all this stuff disappear. And sometimes it is just that bit of risk taking. Just the going there over the edge, pushing the boundaries inside of yourself. And you do that and you get these incredible rewards. And bliss more than you've ever experienced before. Wow. This stuff is real. Profundity. Again, this is not just a bliss like of an orgasm. This is totally different, deeper, more beautiful, more long-lasting. But it comes with a sense of peace and this smell of enlightenment. This is pure. This is free. And you know it's going to go deeper. You turn perpendicular to the stream. You're crossing it now. You're going in, deeper and deeper. Peace, stillness. Then you have to just use your anecdotes to experience. You think, yeah, this can't get any more peaceful. It does get more peaceful. Peace upon peace upon peace. God, this is incredible. You just go for it, and it just takes you deeper in. And it's almost you get to that past that tipping point. It's just too interesting, and just, you know, you've let go so much, you can't stop yourself. You're over the cliff, and you're just falling down. You can't sort of climb up anymore. You're going down the bottom, and you no fear, because now you know you're sort of going. You can't stop yourself. It gets fascinating, enjoyable, and again profound. And on the way down, you realize, you know, it's obvious. The more you let go, the more free you are. And all this stuff which is stopping you getting into the deep meditation, stopping you being free. And it's not the vinaya, not the rules, it's not the core whats of the monastery, it's not the why am I a monk, well, it's not these walls in which, you know, we live. The thing which is stopping you being free is just this wanting, and this me, this stuff which I really am attached to, which I just cannot let go. Letting go of money is easy. Shaving off your hair, giving up all your possessions, leaving your wife and family, that's so easy. Even giving up your body, sacrificing it just in these moments of heroism, running into a burning building to save a kid or something, that's easy. But letting go of this mental world, your past, your future, letting go of all you think you are, your whole identity, letting go of your control, your will, letting go of your consciousness, literally losing your mind. And again, that's another thing, to lose your mind. People who go crazy don't lose their mind. They just get another mind, just a dysfunctional one. They haven't lost a mind, they've just given up one and got another. If you really lose your mind, that's brilliant. The more I lose my mind, the more happy I am. So I spent a lot of time in my cave losing my mind. I know that before I went on my retreat, one of the monks, this was Ajahn Chittapala, said, please may no one go crazy during my 2 weeks absence. Well, I did go crazy. I lost my mind. In a beautiful way. So, bye-bye mind. Just, look, your mind is a pain in the... Well, not a pain in the neck, it's a pain above the neck. It's a pain between the ears, your mind, isn't it? Come, be honest about it. It just drives you crazy. You know, all this thinking and negativity and wanting and... haven't you ever thought, I've had enough of you. You know, just, I'm a monk, I just can't do it. You know, I'm a nun, why can't I find some peace? And you know, I'm trying hard, I'm doing the right things, I've sacrificed so much. You know, I've read, I've studied, I've sat through these talks. Can you see the problem? It's not the Buddhism, it's you. That mind, that thing which you take to be you, that's the problem there. And after a while you just get sick of this pain in the between the ears, behind the eyes, called your mind. It's not located there, but you know what I mean. You say, okay, I had enough with you. Bye-bye. To be able to let that thing go. And when you do lose your mind, what I mean by that is lose all you thought your mind was. I mean, what is that anyway? Just your memories. You know, your education, where you came from, your family. I'm Vietnamese, I'm Norwegian, I'm English. Oh, come on. Just forget all that sort of stuff. I'm smart, I'm funny, I'm stupid, I'm upset. That's not you. There's no one in there. So all that stuff you think you are, all your attainments, all of your qualifications, every label you just throw out, tear up, and discard. There's nothing left. That's called losing the mind. And when that is, it's so free. You don't have to be a success. You don't have to be a failure. You've got nothing to live up to. No one to judge you. Isn't that beautiful when you don't have to be anybody? So you can be totally free. And when you do that, you don't have anything to defend, nothing to be afraid of, no fear, no wanting. You're free. That means you become still. You're free to relax, to be still. And when you sort of start giving these things up, oh, you find that the mind just gets so peaceful and still. You have all these old memories, these old habits. And so those old habits, where do they come from? Why is it that we cannot just, okay, you can all understand what I'm saying, why can't we not do it? And again, it's this habitual tendencies of the mind. And those habitual tendencies can only exist when you have the idea of being somebody. Because that's where those habitual tendencies live. In the concept of me. When that concept of me is vanished, you really do say, this is not me, this is not I. There's no one in here, it's empty, I'm going to give up my mind. When you give up your mind, you give up your habits too. You give up any idea of who you are. A monk, an Ajahn. This is my 37 years as a monk. Teacher, heretic, whoever you think you are. You give that totally up. Vanish, that's not me. When you give up everything you ever thought you were, then with it goes all the habitual tendencies. With those habitual tendencies gone, then the old way of behaving, the old way of fear, protecting, wanting, building up something, because when you were young you were afraid, so you built up all these walls of self and who you think you are, always trying to be somebody to get praise and avoid blame, and never being good enough. Trying and working hard, always thinking, well, you know, I'm terrible, but I'm going to be funny instead. Always wanting to please others and get their approval. All of that just vanishes. You're going to get no one's approval when you get to jhanas. No one's going to give you a tick if you get enlightened. A lot of times, if you are wise, the people just put you down because they're going to get embarrassed. Him being enlightened, him being a street winner, come on, he's an idiot. It's beautiful. So just let go, vanish, disappear. And that's what happens. When the sense of self vanishes, so do the habitual tendencies. When those habitual tendencies gone, that's why it's so easy to let go. Basically, there's nothing else to do. But when you're there, you just can't do it, because all those past ways of dealing with the problems, all of your little meditation idiosyncrasies will keep coming up. Just the same old bad habits, fear, excitement, wanting, just frustration, dreaming, falling asleep, fantasizing, just struggling, getting up, sitting down, trying to escape, and all the different ways people escape in a monastery. I'm sure you've invented more ones than I've remembered. When I was a young monk, there's all sorts of ways you can work the system. The books, the magazines, the cartoons, the iPods, the internet, whatever you manage to get. There's always ways of escaping. But after a while, you sort of give up all those habitual tendencies and you just stop. This is where I stand my ground. I've had enough. So you stop. And in that stopping, beautiful, that's one of my favourite words. Stop, delete. Those are like really beautiful words. In that stopping, you turn. The mind turns and goes inwards. It goes across the stream. When you feel this happening, the mind gets peaceful, it's free, it's happy. And just see how long you can go in that direction. If you go far enough, it gets very clear. This is the way out of samsara. Not through struggling and striving, that just creates more sense of self. You realize that's what the Buddha did, or rather Bodhisattva did before he became enlightened. 6 years of struggling and striving, giving it everything he's got. And that was why, you know, in the hagiography of the Bodhisattva before he became a Buddha, in that sort of story, they always mention just the extreme of sacrifice and effort physically. Never got anywhere. That's just a powerful, powerful teaching. It's a beautiful teaching. It was just saying that, okay, we'll try effort and struggle. Give it the most. Never got anywhere. And then just the beautiful path of just letting go. Sitting, comfortable body. Just like he did when he was a kid. You know, kids, 7-year-old kids, are not known for their struggling and striving. I've seen quite a few 7-year-old kids here, and they don't strive at all. They just enjoy. So there was a 7-year-old Siddhartha sitting under the rose apple tree. Just, the best word for it, chilling out. Under the rose apple tree. His dad was busy doing dad stuff. So he just chilled out. And that was where he found that beautiful path. And he got enough insight there, not full insight, but at least the experience was enough to say, this is the path to Bodhi. To finally, you go path far enough, you become the stream winner. You know the path. Just like it says in that beautiful simile, Anguttara, the shipwreck savers, the one which can float so you can see the shore. You're floating. What does it mean by floating in that simile? It means that, you know, you're not sucked in but to the craving. This mass of ocean of wanting and struggling and striving, which is, you know, our samsara, the great sea, the swirling, moving sea of wanting this and then wanting that, never having any peace. But then you just poke your head above it. And so, you know, that head being above the water, so just being outside of samsara, enough, outside the swirling sea of craving, enough, long enough, just to see, hey, there's dry land over there. There's a place which is totally different than the ocean. That's what it means to be a stream winner. You're actually seen. There's something totally different from this world which I've known of wanting, frustrating, struggling, effort, praise and blame and all that worldly dhammas. There's something which is different, which is free of that. Dry land, free of samsara. So you know, this is the way out. And of course, when that shipwrecked sailor stood near the next sailor, as soon as you see there's a way out, and you offer you're going swimming in that direction as much as you can, as fast as you can. There's nothing else to do. And that's, of course, it's a matter of life and death for the shipwrecked sailor. It's a matter of spiritual urgency to see how much you can let go, to see how much you can renounce, to see how much you can disappear. That's the striving, not real striving. It's the stillness which allows this path to happen. So with that stillness, that letting go of craving, being free, you get closer and closer to the dry land. You can really be outside of this swirling mass of wanting this and getting frustrated and trying again and struggling and wondering just what should I do outside this world of past and future. Just being in the moment, even outside this world of will and consciousness, stopping. And if you can see this, you're just getting closer and closer. Freedom from craving, freedom from the wheel of suffering, the wheel of samsara. Free, content, peaceful. So these are the great insights which you get. Now, I wanted to give a talk today about insight. This is my nature these days, that you know, when you start a retreat, you just want to get people as close and close as you can so they can get the insights for themselves. To teach people how to meditate. And to meditate means teach people how to let go, to stop, be still. Give them the opportunities, try and inspire them, try to get them in the right direction. You know, moving up, moving down, moving up, moving down. I try and twist you. At last, go do something different. In a path you've never gone before. Take that chance. If ever you get into meditation and get a bit scary, well done, carry on. Scare the hell out of yourself. Scare the heaven out of yourself. Scare yourself out of samsara. So yourself disappears. Go for it. And if you're strong enough for that, you know, maybe you get that deep, you get in these jhanas, you get these great insights, you see things which have always been there for you and now disappear. The simile of the tadpole. Ah, now I understand. I think that's what it's like when you gain any of these so-called attainments, these stream winners, once returners, non-returners. It's like you feel just, how stupid was I? How could I see that before? And of course, it's obvious why you can't see that before afterwards. It's because there's no way you could have seen that before. Just intelligence is not enough for real wisdom. You need a sort of an experience, you need what somebody once said, look, you know, to get these great insights, you really do need not just someone to teach, you need a bloody big kick up the bum. Please excuse me for being gross, but I think that's what they said. Because it means you really need to have someone which totally turns you upside down. The deep meditations do that. You know, just going the old ways, just playing it safe. No, is that really what you want to do in this life? No, you just take that chance, take the risk, go for broke. You just go in. When the fear comes, you just, what the hell, I'm going deeper. I'm just going to give up everything for this. The virya, the hero. Go for it, go right in. No holding back, willing to let go of everything. Everything. I'm not going to keep a smidgen of any sense of self, any wanting, totally let go. The more you do it, the more peace, the more beauty, the more inspiration, the more bliss, the more freedom. And you just get into these incredibly deep states of meditation, of insight, of peace. And of course, it changes you forever. And you know now, this is what the Buddha taught. That's why we have this stuff. And you come out often and say, yeah, I couldn't see that before because I didn't have the information. I didn't have the data. I didn't have the experience. You needed that. That's why I try and teach people to meditate. Give them the opportunities for stillness, the time, the encouragement, hopefully the courage as well. And when that happens, you see all this, and you look at those beautiful suttas of the Buddha, which are there, and at last you understand them. Ah, now I understand these things. I don't know, that you know, some of you have been looking at those suttas for I don't know how many years, translating them, comparing them to other sort of editions. But you get to sort of where the Buddha stood, and then from there you look at those suttas, and then you really understand them, you really got them then. And you know, you probably get that experience, you understand. That Buddha was an incredibly powerful teacher. Much more powerful than you know, you could ever think unless you've experienced something. Well, that really was an incredible being. That's why that, say even a stream winner, once you've had that experience, you have the unshakable faith in the Buddha, the Dhamma, the Sangha. Look, you know, just let alone the Buddha. I remember the first time when I got a deep meditation experience, still as a student. It's my sort of desire, inclination was the word I was looking for. My inclination when I came out afterwards was to just go to that teacher and grab his smelly feet and kiss them all over. And it's only because, you know, I was trained in England. You just, in Britain, you don't do such things. You know, the etiquette and politeness in that society was so strong it stopped me. You know, that's what you feel sometimes when you know, you get this incredibly powerful, blissful, deep, profound sort of experiences. You know, whoever helped you, even the smallest way, you just, the gratitude, you know, the love is just overwhelming. Powerful. And don't you think, oh, Gajahn Brahm goes again, he's probably born like this. I've come off it. You know, at last, I'm glad you've seen my in my 60th anniversary booklet. You can see me as a little kid. I wasn't born in jhana. And I made faces in front of the camera. I asked my brother. Now you've seen him. So hopefully he did tell some stories about the stupid things I did when I was a kid. What was that? I remember just... That's right, I remember, I think the Buddhist Fellowship once asked me, what was some of your recollections of being a really bad boy when you were sort of at school? And I do remember, okay, this is, here we go, a couple of the embarrassing experiences when I was a young kid. I remember making a bomb with my friend and blowing it up in the park. Yeah, it was only a tin can, it worked, it's been brilliant. I remember just my school teacher playing a joke on him. This is an 11-year-old, first year in high school. Just, you know, as a kid, you know, I went to the shop and said my dad asked for a copy of Playboy and Penthouse or something. It was amazing, the shopkeeper gave it to me. And I put it in as a present for my teacher. You know, it's amazing, the teacher never guessed. I was this really quiet kid. He didn't realise just how sneaky I was. And he asked all these other kids, was it you? He said, no, it wasn't for me. He never guessed it was me. Oh, that's all these things you do as a kid. So that I wasn't born as an arahat. So, actually, you can't be born as an arahat, can you? But anyway, you know what I mean. But, so, you know, ignore this anyway. So never ever think that I can't do this. Never ever think, oh, just, you know, 2 weeks left, there's no time. It's not going to happen. Never ever think like that. Every moment of your life is a moment, an opportunity. You can just stop and let go. Go in that other direction. You're walking up and down the riverside. Up and down, up and down, up and down. You think, I've been doing this for the last, how many weeks of this retreat? 10 weeks. It's not going to happen. It just needs that slight turn. That's all it is. A slight turn and then, well, I can step over this. And then you're home. It's that close. I just wanted to describe what that really means. You give up. You let go, is going up this way and going down that way. All the usual ways you've been practicing. It hasn't worked, has it? So don't try do more of the same. Do something different. Don't do more striving, more striving. Okay, 10 days, this is it. I'm going to really go for it. I'm not even going to go out for lunch or for breakfast. I'm not going to sit and go and have a wee. I'm going to sit here. That's it. If I die, just who cares? I'm just going to die anyway. Just the monks can cremate me right here. We've still got a couple more days before the fire ban begins, so we can cremate you right here. But all that sort of stuff, that is more of the same. Just what you've been doing for the whole of your life. It hasn't worked yet, it won't work in the last 9 or 10 days. Try something different. Go in a different direction. Look for that different direction. Just find in that different direction what real letting go is. Contentment, peace. None of my business. There's no self in here. This will, it doesn't belong to me, so piss off, will. Consciousness, that's nothing to do with me either. Who's trying to do anything anyway? What's it to attain? It's just nama, rupa, all these experiences, this mind states, not real, not sort of permanent, suffering. All this stuff which I'm trying to attain is a suffering. But nibbana is happiness. What's the big deal here? How can it be? Because it's a different direction. It's the end of afflictions, not more afflictions. So do things like that. Turn around. Try savitnya. Not more of the same. Not more fantasies and dreams and sleeping and drinking coffee. Try something different. I don't mean no more coffee, no more fantasies, no more I'm going to be tough, I'm going to be strict. That is more of the same. Try something different. Try being still. Try stopping. Try contentment. If you do, it might work. If it starts to work, you realize, yeah, this is it. Continue. Don't be afraid. Go for broke. You deserve it. The world doesn't need more crazy monks. There's plenty of those in the world. Don't need more crazy nuns. There's not as many, but there's still too many. Because it's not the sample base is not so much. And all we need is more arahats. More people who just really have seen these teachings, realize them, experience them. And can just go out there and tell other people that it's possible. This is how it works. Don't do the more the same. Do it different. Do it in the way of the Buddha. 6 years of doing more the same like everyone else was doing. He did it different. People didn't understand him. You're crazy. How can you become enlightened that way? It was. Find that different path. The Eightfold Path. The old trail overgrown in the jungle leading to the abandoned city. The path is there in the jungle. It's there. But it just, you haven't uncovered it yet. Simple, direct, peaceful, blissful, free. So that's your role. That's what happens. Hopefully I've done a little bit to maybe just give that little spark. Turn that switch. See what happens. That's the talk this evening.
Namo Vaidikata Sarvakaram Dhamma Se
Bhagavato